is Kay Burnett, and you are listening to the Article 1 podcast. Article 1 is a magazine dedicated to documenting and examining human rights issues Canadians and people around the world face today. It's published by Mount Royal University journalism students in Calgary. This series is produced as a part of the Community Podcast Initiative and powered by Shaw. The name of the magazine comes from Article 1 of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which states that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood. Our magazine and this podcast seek to examine human rights from all angles, anything from climate change to racism in international soccer to the resilience of Indigenous languages. On this episode of the Article 1 podcast, I'll be taking a closer look at the working conditions for those in film, specifically here in Canada, with some examples drawn from the United States. This industry is notorious for the exploitation of workers, so we'll be taking a closer look at what challenges those in the industry face today, and why it's an ongoing issue. This podcast was produced at Mount Royal University, which sits on Treaty 7 territories, a region with a long tradition of storytelling, rich culture, and history. At Article 1, we respect and admire those stories, and are committed to collaborating with First Peoples in our work. We acknowledge the hereditary keepers of these lands, the Nitsitapi, Blackfoot, Eyahe, Nakota, Stoney Nakota, Tsuut'ina, and Métis peoples. Article 1 seeks to decolonize storytelling by including Indigenous ways of knowing and voices. We are all treaty people. In today's episode, I'll tell you the story of the everyday exhaustion film workers experience due to extreme hours and a lack of breaks. I'll show you how this epidemic of fatigue is having serious consequences on those who bring bingeable content to our screens, and why any significant change to the industry is difficult to achieve. To help me get a better understanding of the issues in the industry, I spoke with Damien Petty and Haracha Tukmajian. Yeah, you just celebrated your 25th year of membership, which is probably exciting, but also feels weird. 25 years, that's a long time. What are some of the biggest changes in the industry you've noticed over the years?
There's a lot more money in the industry than there used to be. Not just the size of the industry itself, but the budgets of the projects being produced. And we find ourselves dealing with multinational conglomerates, companies that everybody's heard of, Amazon and Apple, not just billion-dollar companies, but trillion-dollar companies. So along with that comes some challenges. Alberta's got some unique challenges because our provincial government recently removed the caps that limit the size of budget. So they've removed those altogether in March of this year. So we're finding ourselves with some of the largest budget projects in the world shooting right here in Alberta.
Yeah, I was going to ask, related to changes that you've seen over the year, how has safeties and worker protections changed in the time that you've been in the industry?
Well, I think one thing that I can point my finger at is that the penalties that were designed to get employers to stop doing something, for example, a meal penalty designed, can the crew please sit down and eat their meal, are not the deterrent they once were. So we talk about trillion-dollar companies. These employers will pay those penalties. So I think we're living in a world where the people working in the industry are saying, hey, wait a minute, it's changing, and we need more. We want more protections. The meal penalties, one example. Another example is the length of the day. How long can you fairly work people for before enough is enough, and this is a health concern? So these are big issues, and they are industry wide, There's a lot of people doing research on how it works in different countries, but we're still finding that globally there are issues around the health of the workers in the industry stemming from length of day, meal provisions, travel requirements that are unique to our industry. And I'll go one step further and say, most normal jobs, you know when you go to work, when your day's going to end. In this industry, you have no idea precisely what time your shift will end. That's problematic, not just from a health standpoint, but from also the relationships that you have. If you have a family or a spouse or a, you know, your partner, they want to know when they're going to see you again. And if you can't give them a straight answer, well, that's a stressful situation. Also, what kind of shape are you going to be in when you see your partner after 15 hours of working in a remote location? So the unions exist for a very good reason, because people are asking for a stronger voice, and they're asking to be given a fair workday and a fair wage and all of these things around safety. So we have found the penalties are increasing. We are increasing the penalties, but I think big picture wise, I think collectively the industry is looking, the people working on the floor are starting to want more in terms of there has to be an end to this day. How long is too long in terms of hours of work in a day?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. One of my questions was actually, do you think the film industry has higher rates of worker exploitation or mistreatment than other industries, and why that may be a more common issue?
Yeah, so one of the things I've touched on is that the length of day, most industries, you have a defined work day. So I think if people are not clear on when they're going to eat and when they're going to be done work, that is in itself anxiety. There are industries like this, but to work on a constant contingency is anxiety. And when you think that some workers might be diabetic and they need to schedule regular intake of sugar and insulin and things like this, it makes it very difficult if you don't know exactly when your break is coming. And so in some ways we're unique. There are obviously professions that are much more dangerous than ours. I think some of these shows about people doing risky fishing in high seas are much more dangerous than the film industry. But I think there is a danger. The reason the unions exist is to try and mitigate the safety hazards. I think non-union work sites are more dangerous. You just have to look at their COVID protocols and see that when you step foot on a union work site, your COVID protocols are usually way higher than the non-union. And the same applies to other standards as well. And as you get into lower budgets, you sometimes see people trading safety against the budget. Well, actually, you see that at all budgets. Who am I trying to kid? But there is pushback that comes from the union when safety issues are raised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned that the length of day and the hours that people work, they don't really know, right? Why do you think the work in the industry is structured in a way where people can be working for unsure amount of times?
Yeah. So what I think is that the process is so complicated with so many moving pieces that nobody wants to commit to a start and an end time. And one of the pressures that's unique to the industry is many actors have in their contract, performers, if you will, A-listers I'm talking about, they're only available on days X, Y, and Z, but not on days A, B, and C. So the whole schedule is turned on its ear to accommodate for people who are booked on multiple projects. So you end up constantly changing your schedule. Add to that the weather affects shooting days. So if it suddenly starts unpredictably raining and there's no rain in the scene, this will add to the amount of time in the day, might force them to shoot interiors and to restructure. So the work itself is a large contingency, if you will, because of many competing factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a sense of what work-related injuries, whether mental or physical, are most common amongst crew members?
I think fatigue is an issue, and I think that length of day affects. I think there are some good studies done on fatigue that show, you know, if you work more than a 12-hour day, your decision making is impaired. There have been some films made about it, and there's somebody by the name of Haskell Wexler who did a short film called Who Needs Sleep? Haskell Wexler, he passed away a few years ago, but that started a movement within the industry. There have been deaths over the years, not just stunt performers, but and I'm not disrespecting stunt performers, but things that have happened where you question the decision making. Well, if you're questioning the decision making, you have to look at fatigue. And I think many people who've studied it will say it can impair you in a way that alcohol or drugs can impair your decision making process. So I think there's a link there. And I think people are connecting these dots. People are saying Sarah Jones died on a railway track. Whose decision was it to shoot on a live railway line? We have a penalty. It's sad to me that we have to have this, but we do. We have a penalty where if you go more than 9 hours without a meal break and without sitting down, it's not just someone hands you a hot dog. Like, you've got to go to somewhere warm and actually sit down and be unencumbered by work.
That was Damien Petty, president of IATSE Local 212. IATSE, or the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, is a labor union that represents over 150,000 entertainment workers in the US and Canada. Petty's local is here in Southern Alberta, which he's been the president of for over 22 years now. Petty says that although having larger budget productions here creates more jobs, it also makes it harder for unions like IATSE to protect workers. The industry has a long history of overworking employees and providing little to no rest, and these issues have only grown with the industry. Petty tells me that labor unions like IATSE use financial penalties to hold employers accountable, but the rise of wealthy media companies challenge the effectiveness of these penalties. Larger budget productions in Alberta, especially owned by billion or trillion dollar companies such as Amazon, Apple, or Disney, opens the possibility of further mistreatment of film workers. Employers can set intense deadlines and afford to have their employees work double or triple time with little rest. Haracha Tukmajian, who has been in the industry for over a year now, says because these long hours are normalized and, quote, the nature of the industry, unquote, employees will work in these conditions, even at the expense of their mental and physical well-being.
Okay. Hello, my name is Haracha Tukmajian. I am an independent filmmaker and also a worker in the film industry. I work in costumes with IATSE 212, and I also work as an office production assistant with the Directors Guild of Canada.
Okay, awesome. So how long have you officially been working in the field?
I'm very, very new to the industry as a whole because I just graduated from the SAIT film and video television program. It's called the film and video program right now. I just graduated from there in April. I got my diploma in June and started working in the industry. Right after that, I've been working on this FX series Under the Banner of Heaven for about 6 months now. right out of the gate from film school.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, what's that experience been like working right out of school?
It's been tiring. It's the film industry, right? It's a lot of hours, but it was really, really exciting to get my foot in the door so early. And I consider myself very lucky that I had the personnel and just the people that could, that allowed me to kind of have my foot in the door. I learned a lot because this, even like I worked in different departments. I would work, initially I started as just a daily production assistant, just moving around some stuff for the offices and all. And then afterwards, I helped around in different departments, like in costumes, and they kind of took me in as one of their own. And from there, I just worked in the wardrobe costume department and became a costumer with just, I made so many friends there, so many connections, and learned a whole new skill set that I never thought I would ever learn, or it never just would have crossed my mind. That's why I was so intrigued by it. And just seeing the creative processes from like with this is like one of the it's a very high budget show. It's produced by Disney FX. It's like the highest caliber project I've ever worked on, and it's my first project in the industry. So it's extremely stressful, and it's very overwhelming at first, but you kind of get used to it, and the hours were kind of they were immediately introduced to me. I would work 8 hours, then 10 hours, 11 hours, and then 12 hours, which is the standard when you're not on set, you're just in the office. And from costumes, I worked there for around 2.5 months. And then I transferred back to the production office where I worked as a, where I still work as a office production assistant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's awesome that you got a job right out of graduating and such a big project too. Like, it's super exciting. So I guess, obviously challenging too. What do you find is the biggest challenge so far, now that you're actually working?
It was kind of the thing that I underplayed when I was in film school or when I was just working as a daily. It's the hours, right? Mm-hmm. You don't really understand it till you start working it. It's not really about work in that sense, because when you work so many hours, it kind of just becomes all encompassing. It becomes your life. It's not really a job. It's more of like, for 6 months, this is your life. And it's not much of a, it's not a 9-to-5 where you have some time to breathe. It's more of, you need to shape your life to accommodate for this giant production. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the main things. It was very hard to get used to because, you know, when you're in school, you don't really have that much time, as much time as you think, or as much time as you think you can spend on things. But I think I learned a lot in the sense of just how much you could do in a day, which is a lot. So yeah, it was definitely the hours, the days, the overtime. You know, the 6 day weeks, the Fratterdays, as the industry likes to call it. And just having very little rest, very little sleep. But you know, that's the industry.
Yeah. I guess on that, so I spoke with Damien Petty the other day, actually, who I'm sure you know is the president of the IATSE local here. He mentioned that fatigue is a big issue in the industry, that because you guys are work such long hours and you don't get enough time to rest. This fatigue can actually result in impairment, like mentally. Have you experienced that or know people who've experienced that?
Oh yeah. It's less so of like a phenomenon and more of kind of just the standard in the industry. Like it's a normal, which an outsider's perspective looking in, it would seem very alien, but to us it's quite natural. Not natural, it's just kind of the status quo. And, you know, I'm speaking from, I worked mainly in the costume office and the costume shop and the production office, which are, you know, they're not as long hours, but I did work on set for a week or so as a costumer when they really needed more people for all the background and all. And those days were like very long, like 14 to 16 minimum. And, you know, the pay is decent, but, you know, it's sometimes the pay just on your mental health, on your physical health, it starts to degrade. And one of the main, you know, like I transferred to the production office because I just, when I was working in the costume shop, I felt, you know, it was a little too much sometimes. And it wasn't in a sense of, I wanted to go to a production office. I wanted to learn more about other things where I knew I could. And the hours, the fatigue would play a large part in that, because for like a month or so, we were working like six days a week.
So yeah, tell me a bit. So you mentioned how working in this industry, it's less of a job, more of just a lifestyle.
Yeah.
Tell me about how working in film affects your personal relationships in your everyday life.
Oh, it affects it to the it affects it to the point of where you don't have any. It's kind of just your family or the people you live with. Like I live with my family, and you know, I still, like, sometimes you have to work weekends because, you know, things need to get done, but most of the time the people working on set, I'd say, like, I have a friend who's working in on set and very taxing hours, and he and I frequently talk a lot about how it is more of a lifestyle, how you don't really have time to even plan much. If the week is crazy, it's just kind of go. Oh, okay, I'm at the weekend, and, you know, I'm so exhausted, I can't really hang out with anyone or bring myself to plan anything to go, because I just need to rest so I could be fresh for the next week. But yeah, it definitely affects how many people outside of the industry you kind of like mingle with, because the film industry is very like clicky, because it's just, you kind of have a new family. Like I see the people at work more than I see my family or any of my friends.
Tukmajan says working in the industry means you don't have a personal life. This makes maintaining personal relationships difficult because you see coworkers more often than family and friends. The industry even has the term Fraturdays coined to describe the common occurrence of a Friday shift bleeding into Saturday, leaving workers with just one day to do household chores and, if they are lucky, rest. These long days, sometimes combined with the lack of a proper break due to the nature of the industry, can result in deadly levels of fatigue. There are many horror stories of film workers falling asleep at the wheel on their commute back home at the end of a long shift. This is just one example of how fatigue can snowball into something more serious. Petty mentions the death of Sarah Jones, an American camera operator who was killed by a train in 2014 on a set in Georgia. Petty says labor unions exist to mitigate safety issues and protect workers, but with the growing money in the hands of production companies and their parent companies, it is increasingly difficult to hold employers accountable for overworking their employees. You've been listening to the Article 1 podcast. Article 1 is a human rights magazine published by Mount Royal University journalism students in Calgary. The Article 1 podcast series is produced as a part of the Community Podcast Initiative and powered by Shaw. We also want to thank artist Broke for Free for the track Daybird off the Directionalist EP. Lastly, special thanks to Ethan Ward for producing this podcast. My name is Kay Burnett. Thanks for listening.